Unpacking even more ambiguous NFL rosters today on the Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. My name is Herms, the guy who guides the conversation on this program, joined as always by my good friend and associate, the man who carries the show, Mr. Tyler Orzynski, a.k.a. Tyler O. We have more roster situations that are just a little bit weird, a little bit kind of hard to figure out. But you have an article that came out on FTNFantasy.com that goes through these various team situations and these positional quagmires for 2026. I really liked that choice of words for the title. Quagmires is very fun to say out loud. But yeah, that's what we're going to be doing today, listeners. That is what we have on deck. Tyler, how are you doing? And generally speaking, when you're looking at roster situations like the ones we're going to highlight today, like, at what point does something really become like so murky that you just honestly cannot figure it out? Like, what degree of uncertainty do you have to qualify for something like this?
I mean, generally speaking, it's going to be where's the group of players in the same either pass catchers or running backs going in ADP, right? Do we have like three pass catchers going in the top five rounds? Do we have, you know, three running backs that are actually like being drafted? We know because the team's usually not going to have three draftable running backs on their team. Like, is there a subset of players that are actually getting meaningful ADP to where the ADP would suggest like someone is going to miss, right? A lot of the times we'll see a wide receiver room or running back room where you look at where these players are being drafted and we know that that offense can't support these players to all hit at that ADP. So what that leads me to is trying to figure out, you know, where to plant the flags, what players to take. So largely when I think of a murky room or positional quagmire, what have you, a lot of it just comes down to like the ADP of where these players are being drafted and me telling myself, like, I do not think that these players can all pay off at this price, and or there's players that are mispriced here and some are too cheap. So that's generally how I look at this situation first.
And that is what we are going to go through. We're going to see where you are planting those proverbial flags. It's going to be a super fun exercise. And I will have the link in the description to this article, as I usually do when we talk about articles on the podcast. And we start in very familiar territory for people that have listened to our podcast for an extended amount of time. The Chicago Bears have a very busy pass catching room, not only with their top two pair of receivers, but a tight end, which is not always the case. Some of these pass catcher situations are sometimes just wide receivers, but this involves Colston Loveland and a couple of his teammates, Roma Dunze and Luther Burden. How are we approaching this one?
Not going to spend much more airtime here talking about the fate on Luther Burden. If you are just tuning in for the first time, go back and listen to any other podcasts at this point in time. I'm not drafting Luther Burden. I'll just say that and we'll leave it at that. Which would then naturally lead you to Rome Odunze, as Luther Burden is coming off the board roughly as wide receiver 21 and Rome Odunze wide receiver 29. And I think Rome Odunze to be the more talented wide receiver between the two. Now, I do prefer to draft Rome over Luther Burden at cost. Even if they were the same cost, I would probably still prefer Rome. But I will note that there has been some concerns with Roma Dunze's foot that do make him a difficult click at the wide receiver 29 price, which then leaves me to, obviously, Colston Loveland, who I've been quite high on ever since the 2025 pre-draft process. I famously had Loveland over Tyler Warren during the whole time we were doing the evaluation going into the draft. It wasn't as unpopular after Loveland went before Tyler Warren, but in the end of the day, I've stuck to my guns as Loveland being an elite tight end in the NFL. Yes, it maybe took half season for him on the Bears to figure all that out, but I think what we saw down the stretch, and particularly in the playoffs last year out of Loveland, makes me believe that he is the alpha, the target earner in Ben Johnson's offense. And I have Colston Loveland appropriately priced at tight end 3. And I'm okay with spending a round 4 price on Loveland, as I believe he is going to be a player. Is there one player that at the end of this season that we can start talking about in the McBride-Bowers tier? To me, that's Colston Loveland. You're paying for it. Ooh. But when we're talking about betting on a Bears pass catcher, Loveland is a name that I'm more willing to plant my flag on here than the other two.
No, and like you said, down the stretch, it got pretty nuts, man. The amount double-digit targets in however many of those games. I want to say it was four, like even including the playoffs from the end of the regular season there for Loveland. It was pretty wow. Like, that's really the only thing I can think of is just wow. He went off. And you know, like you were saying, we talked about some of these things. If you want to hear more about Luther Burden and Colston Loveland, we actually did that series going over the rookie class by position. Another thing you guys can check out here at the Crossing Routes podcast. See, we got it all. We got something for everybody. And I think the next thing we have for everybody is, in fact, the Jacksonville Jaguars receiver room. Another one that we talked about a little bit in a recent episode when talking about our man Jacoby Myers, who I still love, who I still think the people should draft as well. But there's obviously more to it. There are a lot of moving parts here in this Florida-based offense. So how are you kind of viewing the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2026?
Yeah, you got to take a step back, I think, and just kind of realize what the Jaguars are probably putting together here. Right. So they have Brenton Strange, who you and I both, I would agree, is a pretty good tight end. Mm-hmm. You know, they went and drafted Nate Bowkirker in the second round. And then also Tanner Kozile. Kozile? Do you know the pronunciation there, Herms? I'm not sure.
I want to say Kozile.
Kozile? Thank you. Yeah. They drafted him in the fifth. So what the NFL in general, from a macro perspective, and then what the draft is kind of pointing towards is, a lot of these more heavy personnel sets, two tight end sets. Why that is important here about talking about wide receivers is typically what that means now is we have two wide receivers on the field instead of three, which can condense things. Look at what the Seahawks did last year. They were running a lot of two tight end sets. A lot went to Jackson Smith and Jigba. You can point to a lot of cases like that across the field. The Rams are another good example of this. They're running Devontae Adams and Puka. Puka exploded. The signs would point to the Jaguars doing a very similar thing here. Now, it's not mean they're going to run 100% two tight end sets. It just means they're going to run more two tight end sets than we think. There is going to be some three wide receiver sets run out there. ADP would suggest that Brian Thomas and Parker Washington would be the locked-in wide receivers in that two wide receiver sets. And I'm saying, Herms, I'm not so sure, right? Mm-hmm. We're writing off Jacoby Myers entirely, in my opinion, here. He's proven he can play in this league. He's proven he can earn targets. He's proven that he can do it on the Jaguars, right? He got an extension out of it, right?
Yeah.
So he's my preferred click here. Wide receiver 46 off the board right now. He's been, I believe, in the top 32 for the last like 5 years. He's had multiple top 24 seasons. I think he's had a top like 20 season. He's just a very, very consistent wide receiver with a good floor, but then I believe he also has a little bit of a ceiling, particularly in those PPR leagues as well. I'm generally passing on Parker Washington and Brian Thomas at price and just opting to take Jacoby Myers, as I think he's going to be getting a little bit more run in those two wide receiver sets. So when we look at this Jaguars wide receiver group, Jacoby Myers is the name for me.
No, and I think, you know, with the whole theme of this being ambiguous situations, weird kind of rosters, I think about basically what Myers has done for his entire career. Because you think about it, some of those Patriots teams that he was on, not that great. Some of that time spent with the Raiders, it was not that great. And thank God the Jaguars have been good ever since he, you know, came into town and all that. He's in a good offense now. But I just think there has to be something to be said for somebody that consistently figures out how to get it done and how to be on the field and do all of that. And yeah, dude, wide receiver 46 or whatever, like that is a steep, steep discount. Folks, start paying attention to this. It's becoming a bit of a big deal at this point. Another situation that we are going to go over is one that involves running backs instead, not people who catch passes primarily, although these guys are capable of doing so. They do have hands. They all play for the Denver Broncos. There's, of course, the returning veteran J.K. Dobbins, who got hurt at the end of last year, opening things up for R.J. Harvey. But they go out and draft Jonah Coleman in, I want to say, this is a third round pick by them, I think. So it's a lot busier now. We know that Sean Payton traditionally has used multiple backs in his offensive systems, but there's three. At most, we would maybe be able to figure out which two names we like a lot, but I don't know. A lot of different directions that this could go. Tyler, what say you about the Broncos?
Yeah, the Broncos running back room is tricky for me. It really is, because I was somebody who was out on RJ Harvey last season, particularly in the draft. I thought people were taking him too high. And now I think I might be in at these prices. So first thing I'll say, Jonah Coleman, I think he might have been a day three pick, but he's RB50, right? Doesn't cost a lot to acquire. If you want to click him down the list, park him on your bench. I do not have an issue with the Jonah Coleman thing. So really the question here is between Dobbins and Harvey. Dobbins did certainly lead this group last year, but I think Harvey showed enough. I do think you can nitpick at his efficiency. That is fair. But I don't think there is going to be a bell cow here. And the way that this offense has been run, particularly in New Orleans, we don't have a bell cow either. So where I stand on this is the RB30 Harvey, RB36 Dobbins. I do like grabbing Harvey around this range as like my RB3, is I always profiled him and looked at him more like a pass-catching back, and he proved he can be a little bit more than that. So my bet here is that he leads a committee. Him and Dobbins head it, right? Whatever. But I think there's more of those high-value touches are going to go RJ Harvey's way. I think things have swung a little bit too far in the other direction. Give me Harvey at RB30. It's a name that I find myself keeping the click going on.
Yeah, you know, and the interesting thing about Harvey in particular is that, you know, like you said, the pass catching component, like Sean Payton does like to have that as a fixture of his offense, is throwing to these running backs. And of all of them, he is the guy that makes the most sense. And I know that we've talked about Harvey in like more of a dynasty context over the past several months and stuff. And we were not very stoked about his value at that time. But I think what we're seeing now with him going off the board at RB30 is people are reacting. They're processing like, okay, all right, this is a little bit weirder now. And we're seeing it get to a range where, yeah, you can take a chance on this for a guy that has that one differentiator in a room full of three people. So at that point, I kind of think of it as like, well, that's really a competition between Dobbins and Coleman at that point for whatever share of that work is, you know? So being able to silo things like that, it's a very big benefit for Harvey. I think he is a very interesting person to highlight in that situation. But another team that has like three people, maybe even more. They signed multiple free agents. They have multiple names we know, including Rashad White, Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, rookie Ka'Tron Allen. I think they signed Jerome Ford to like a one-year deal. The Washington Commanders have a lot going on. I know we've talked about this, but it definitely warrants further consideration. So, Tyler, over to you.
Yeah, and last time we talked about this, we didn't really have ADP to go off of, and that kind of changes the conversation. So right now we're looking at Rashad White, RB38, Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt right behind him at 41, and then Ka'Tron Allen down at 58. The reason why Rashad White is leading ADP is simple. He's the best pass catcher out of this group by a landslide, and I think people are starting to kind of figure that piece out. Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt can't catch a cold. And I think Ka'Tron Allen can catch, but I don't necessarily think I would bet that to be a very good skill set coming out the gate for the rookie. So I keep clicking White's name, and I will as long as he's in the 30s range. I'm completely avoiding Kroski-Merritt here. He doesn't catch the ball, and I would much rather just bet on Ka'Tron Allen taking over that between the 20s kind of first and second down role from Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt. As I've liked Allen, I've pushed my chips on him. You've seen him live in person. You know he's a good runner. So I think that, you know, Rashad White's role as a pass catcher is pretty safe here. But I do like Ka'Tron Allen a bit more, and we'll take that stab at 58. And I think this really comes down to is, like, what if we're wrong? Then we wasted an RB58 slot on Ka'Tron Allen, whatever. But Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt at RB41, you know, there's not great players there, but there's other players in that range I think I'd rather have. So this is Rashad White and Ka'Tron Allen's backfield in terms of how I draft.
No, it makes a lot of sense, and it kind of reminds me of what we were saying about the Broncos backfield. Like, having a guy who is very specifically good at that one differentiating skill, it's going to help him a ton. Rashad White has had at least 50 catches in three of his four NFL seasons. Like, this is a thing that he does. This is what he is going to do. But Allen, yeah, like, low key can kind of do that stuff. When I was at the Senior Bowl, yes, another Senior Bowl reference from Herms. Ha, surprise. But he was pretty good in some of those patch catching drills. It was a little bit more functional, I would say, than something that he was like, quote unquote, natural at. But like, he can get the job done. But yeah, no, Rashad White, always been a really big fan of his. I know we caped for him pretty hard this time last year, and it actually worked out reasonably well. So I don't know. Always good to root for your favorites, just as we are going to do on the other side of our commercial break, because our next backfield that we are going to talk about that is a little bit kind of strange right now happens to be for my favorite NFL team. So don't go anywhere. This is the Crossing Routes Podcast. Hey, everyone. C.H. Herms from FTN's Crossing Routes Podcast. Watching sports is a very fun thing to do all by itself, but sometimes it can be even better when you have a little bit more on the line than just your regular rooting interest, if you know what I mean. But if you don't live in a state that has a sports book, how are you supposed to get in on all the action? Well, thanks to our friends at Novig, America's number one sports prediction market, people in over 35 states now have unprecedented access to all of the hottest plays around the world of sports. Better yet, if you sign up and make a minimum $5 purchase with code FTN at checkout, not only will you get to join in on all the Novig fun, but we will email you a promo code for a free month of a GOAT subscription for free. That's right. Unlock our top flight subscription that gets you all of our premium content, betting models, and expert picks across the world of sports. If you've ever wondered what an FTN GOAT subscription would be like, this is a great way to find out. So all you got to do is go to Novig.us or download the Novig app. Give them all the information they're looking for, make a minimum $5 purchase, but make sure to include that code FTN at checkout to get in on the Novig fun and unlock a free month of our GOAT tier subscription for free for an entire month. Seems like a pretty good time if you ask me. So go ahead and sign up for Novig, America's number one sports prediction market. Alrighty then, welcome back everybody to the Crossing Routes Podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. I am still Herms, he is still Tyler Rowe, and we are still unpacking some roster situations around the NFL that are just, it's too tough to call, you know, but we have to plant our flag somewhere. We have to figure out who we want to believe in for the 2026 fantasy football season. And we continue our conversation around some running backs on the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm very excited to always talk about the Steelers whenever it comes up. I am a huge Jalen Warren guy. I always have been. I really wanted him to get more touches as a rookie when they didn't get him the ball nearly enough, but they figured it out eventually, and now he is low-key one of the better running backs every single year. But Rico Dowdle, now on the roster as well, rejoining his old coach with the Dallas Cowboys, Mike McCarthy, in Pittsburgh. So we have a guy that is the incumbent that people like plenty, and then the guy that was brought in by the guy who's going to be coaching the team now. So which direction do you go between Warren and Dowdle?
Yeah, and then Rico Dowdle is also coming up back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. I think that is something we need to mention, too. So Jalen Warren, at the time of writing this, was RB28. Dowdle was 32. I'll be honest with you. I don't have the strongest take here. I'm okay kind of clicking both. I've always been a little bit more of a Jalen Warren detractor, not because of his talent, just because like I've never really believed that he has what it takes to be a bell cow or much of a lead back. I think he's more of a pass catching guy. And I tend to click Rico Dowdle's name a little bit more as he's a little bit cheaper. And he does tend to fall in drafts because there are a lot of Jalen Warren fans out there. He's a fun running back. He does some cool things. So I don't think Caleb Johnson is a factor here at all. He's off the radar. So it's between these two. And I tend to lean Rico Dowdle's way, who, back-to-back 1,000-yard season, has the connection with Mike McCarthy. Came into a situation where he beat the incumbent out in Chuba Hubbard with the Panthers. So he's used to coming in and earning his keep and taking the load here. I don't ever think Rico Dowdle is going to take the pass catching completely away from Jalen Warren, but I do believe there's going to be some goal line stuff, more carries, and probably some targets there for Rico Dowdle And I would prefer for Rico Dowdle to outscore Jalen Warren end of season, and he's a little bit cheaper. So I do lean that way.
Well, it certainly makes sense. And I think you're right about Dowdle being able to take away at least a little bit of the receiving work. He had 49 targets and 39 catches in that, you know, one season in Dallas in 2024 when McCarthy was still around as his coach. And yeah, at least as long as Aaron Rodgers is still on the team, Caleb Johnson is not going to be a factor at all. Like they do not get along. It was a big part of the reason why training camp storylines were so fun to follow last year. But yeah, I mean, I also decided to pull some stats for this just, you know, to add a little bit of color. And I went through and I found out how often the Mike McCarthy offense in Dallas ran certain run types from 2022, when our data for that stuff starts at FTN Stats and Charting, through 2024. And they ran inside zone at the highest rate of any run type that we chart at 29.985%, as it got down. So 30%. And then I decided to go see, well, over the past couple seasons, who has been better in these inside zone run situations in just like yards per attempt. And Rico Dowdle came out at 3.8-ish, and Jalen Warren came out around 4.3. So I don't know, like it's not a huge disparity, but it's a slight efficiency bump if you lean a little bit more toward Warren. So there's some stuff inside the numbers. I don't know if that wants to impact your decision one way or another, but that's the information that I have. And we move on now to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers receivers. Everybody loves some Emeka Egbuka, especially now that Mike Evans is no longer on this Buccaneers team. He is signed with the San Francisco 49ers this offseason, but there are still other guys like, I don't know, Chris Godwin, you ever heard of him? And some other pieces that have to be mentioned. So yeah, like there's a lot to unpack here. Like Mike Evans leaving doesn't just all of a sudden fix this in terms of clarity at all.
Egbuka is wide receiver 17 right now. You know, it's been very clear to me he has what it takes. He was a top 10 wide receiver through the first half of the season before things fell apart. No, I'm willing to bet from what I saw in college and what we saw him early as a pro that this price is fine, right? I'm not rushing to the stand to submit my Egbuka card, but I'll take him when he's there, when he falls. We got Godwin down at wide receiver 40, which I also think is a fairly good price. I do like clicking his name because we know he can earn targets, but I think he has proven that he is a shell of himself. In terms of guys that I'll click later on, it's between the rookie Ted Hurst and Jalen McMillan. McMillan is the name that I find myself clicking the most here, as I think he's being low-key slept on a bit. Wide receiver 58, so pretty much free. There's very few wide receivers in that range that offer the upside that McMillan does. So he's the name that I think I will be continuing to click the most as kind of that, you know, one injury away, or, you know, if something happens to Godwin or Egbuka, that he's a guy that could be a difference maker on your fantasy team. So I'm fine with the Godwin price, fine with the Egbuka price, but McMillan's the guy that I've been targeting late as an upside stash in case something happens to Egbuka or Godwin. As we know, he's just aging, has been dealing with injuries.
Oh, for sure. You know, and I think one of the really fun things about situations like this, if you choose to look at it that way, is just the fact that, yeah, like people will just dismiss certain names and they will just fall a lot further down than maybe they should. So as long as McMillan stays a big value like that, like, yeah, like as of this moment, like he could still very much figure into something or just be that one injury away guy like you were talking about, which was a topic recent podcast. You can also go back and listen to that. And if you want more information about Emeka Egbuka, he was actually one of the subjects in one of my recent fantasy face-offs that also went on ftnfantasy.com. See, so many organic tie-ins. What a wonderful show we got here. What a great program. The last thing that we definitely want to get to, because this one, I mentioned this in a different article that I came out with the other day. I went through and looked at draft busts over the past like five seasons and tried to find things in common. And I looked a lot at running backs who had very small sample sizes that people maybe believed in too much the following year, being a very common bust archetype. And one of the little notes that I left at the end of that section, you know, in parentheses, because I tried to tie in, you know, present day, like 2026 examples, was Cam Scadaba, dude. It was like 8 games, man. He was only healthy for 8 games. And even like the first like game and a half, he was still having that weird split until Tyrone Tracy got hurt. So it's a very small sample size. And I think people are maybe overestimating their confidence with Scadaba. That's my lean. Do you feel similarly?
I do feel similarly here, as I liked what we saw out of Scadaba. Okay. I did. I think there's a reason to be excited. But I, to me, it's the injury, right? It was a brutal injury. I was at that game. I saw it. I'm afraid it's going to take him longer than we think to truly be 100%, to truly be this Cam Scadaba that we saw last season by week one. Does he have the balance? Does he have the burst that made him special? If there is a couple rounds of discount here, I would be more in. But where he's going, I need to pass. Tyrone Tracy, I think, is a talented back and a better pass catcher than Scadaba. And people forget that he is a wide receiver in college, and he was the lead back up until he had an injury and Scadaba took over. So all things considered, I think this backfield is a little bit more of a split than people are given credit for, opening up the door for some Tracy value to be established or clicked on or hacked. So that's where I'm landing on things now. No one really likes the Tyrone Tracy pick. It's not a sexy pick, but I do think it will result in some, you know, not like league winning or week winning fantasy points, but some stability, right? And sometimes you might need that, especially in zero RB drafts.
No, and the really fascinating thing to me is that when we did essentially this episode, like last summer, one of the backfields we would talk about is this exact one, you know? And it, like, the market is reacting in such a way that they have some semblance of clarity on the whole thing. But, you know, like we've been saying, that's kind of the whole point. It's like, how much do we really know about that? It's a small number of games. And to your point, injury of any kind, especially one that gross, is kind of a hard thing to come back from. So, like, we still have so much to learn between now and when they get to camp and all that stuff before we can be super declarative about that. So, like, I if we end up with a bit of a discount later on, cool. But as things stand right now, it's a little bit, I don't know, I'm not exactly down. Are there any other situations that we did not highlight that you would like to get in before we get out of here for our listeners?
No, man, I'm in a good spot. We talked about the big ones. I'm sure there might be a couple that surface here. There's some quarterback battles. We might be able to talk about it another day. But Herms, I think we covered a lot in a short amount of time, as always.
Hell yeah, my dude. And if you want to just read some of the other things that are in that article, again, I have that link in the description for you. Go over and check out Tyler's full analysis on some of these positional quagmires for 2026. But until we talk next time, we are saying goodbye here on the Crossing Routes podcast. I am Herms, he is Tyler O, and we are saying goodbye. Talk to you next week.
Think of better for say goodbye and staying up and sleeping late.